You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show, heard weekday mornings, 9 a.m. to 9:50. We're live at LATalkRadio.com, and then later on each day we post the podcast available for listening on demand, download. You can also get free apps to listen on your iPhone or your Android. So we're accessible all kinds of ways. We're also on iTunes. We're pending with Stitcher. We're in their approval process. We have availability on SoundCloud. So we're around. If you miss or just want to check up, what we do is we give you a summary of each day's broadcasts with the information about who was our guest and a little overview of the topic. So you can just go to MariaSanchezShow.com. If you click on today's podcast, it doesn't mean that you can't listen to the prior ones, because it all goes to the archives, and then you can scroll down and you can see. So we've been busy. We had a busy week this week, and today we've got the luxury of being able to discuss more in depth some of the stories that are pertinent today, this morning, as well as to some of the stories that were out this week that we didn't get a chance to touch upon and that I haven't heard other people talking about. So we've got some pearls here to share with you. Obviously, this is Memorial Day weekend coming up to honor our service members, so please make sure that you take some time out to do so. It is because of them that we are the greatest, most free nation in the world. And if you are listening on the World Wide Web, no offense, please, but that's what we Americans think of ourselves. According to AAA, they're saying nearly 35 million Americans are going to be making a 50-plus mile trip this weekend. I would be one of them. I wasn't going to go away for the weekend because I like being at home, and I'm a gardener in terms of I have a vegetable garden, but I've also got strawberries, so that's the one crossover with my vegetables. And it is just fascinating to me, and it takes a lot of my time, and I just love being around it. I have a wicked green thumb, so things are just growing abundantly. So I had to water real heavily yesterday late so that it can limp along while in my absence. Of course, my sons will be house-sitting for me, but I don't want to relegate them to watering the garden. But the reason that I am going out of town is tomorrow is the memorial for my former fiancé who passed away from a heart attack last week, and it is in San Diego. It's open to the public if any of you knew or cared about or would like to honor Chuck Muncy, former NFL superstar who actually turned his life around and got it going and did nonprofit work and set up the Chuck Muncy Foundation that did gang tattoo removals, among other things. And he turned 60 in March of this year, and massive heart attack, and he's gone. Still really bizarre to think about that. So his funeral is tomorrow at noon at the Rock Church, I think it's called. Let me look. And I was speaking with my folks last night about my imminent arrival today. And here we see it. Oh, yeah, the Rock Church in San Diego on Rosecrans Street. And my dad said, "Do you want us to go with you?" And I was like, "Oh, I didn't expect that. I mean, I'm happy to go alone. I do so much on my own." And he goes, "Oh, no, I think we'd like to go." And I was like, "Okay." My folks are sweet people. I am so blessed to have them around. They've been married 58 years. I don't just love them, I like them, and so it's going to be a treat for me to be able to see them for the weekend. So I'm making a weekend out of it to stay with them in San Diego, and I get to take care of them. I do laundry and groceries and cooking and some, you know, straightening and organizing, and I try and tuck them in bed every night and put the proper medications on my mom, because she doesn't have access really to wherever she needs stuff. She needs topical things because she's in chronic pain since she had her right breast removed 6 years ago. So there's that. There is a release of a movie called We Steal Secrets that debuted today. And it is a documentary about the WikiLeaks, Alex Gibney's documentary. And Julian Assange is, of course, in part, obviously part and parcel with the story. He's in self-imposed exile at the Ecuadorian embassy in London, and he didn't cooperate with the making of it. But the reason I bring it up is I did an interview with Mike Huckabee. He happened to be at the Reagan Library, and we were there because of that. And the WikiLeaks story had just come to light, and he said, as I was interviewing him, he said something that went viral, and it was something about, I think they should all be hung and killed or something like that. And that's somehow, because I was doing an internet television show at the time, that video went viral. We had over 10,000 views in less than 24 hours, and I got contacted by the BBC and Radio Europe and MSNBC and et cetera, if they could use it. And so, of course, we said yes. So this documentary reference is, I don't know if it made it through the cutting room floor or not, but so that's, they had contacted to me to see if they could have permission to use it. And, of course, I said yes. So that's, it may or may not end up in the finished version. So I'd like to see it just in case. And then speaking of Friday, then we'll get to news, is also in the news today in the entertainment arena is that the Michael Douglas and Matt Damon pick about Liberace behind the candelabra is debuting on Sunday on HBO at 9 o'clock, and they say it's really captivating. And Michael Douglas plays, of course, Liberace, and Matt Damon plays the young paramour that who knew what was going on, because in those days you weren't allowed to be gay or out. And so even though Liberace was just over the top with his costumes and his jewelry and his effusiveness and everything else, he officially had to and necessarily remain straight. So he was famously, he would sue any publication that dared to suggest otherwise, and yet he was trapped because he wasn't. It says in some of the stories that for decades he was the most popular performer in the world, a classically trained pianist, and he turned it into something else, which then leads us into the next story that's making the big news, is that the Boy Scouts yesterday, which we spoke about yesterday morning, but they voted yesterday, and they have lifted the ban of 103 years on having openly gay scouts. So more than 60% of the group's national council, which was comprised of about 1,400 delegates that met in Texas this week, voted in favor of ending the ban. That's going to take effect on January 1st of 2014. So prohibition on openly gay adult leaders is not changing. That's going to stay in place. And what they're saying is that the younger generation of Scouting just didn't see it the way the old guard did. And especially when we can have gay soldiers serving openly in the military and gay couples that can get married in several states, I think it's up to 12 now, that should happen. Now, what people were worried about, this vote was supposed to take place in February, as we mentioned yesterday, and the Boy Scouts of America decided that they wanted to get a better sense for how their folks were feeling, which I think sounds reasonable. So they surveyed them and got the opinions back, and it seemed that the majority was ready for the change. Now, they were afraid because of the religious groups. 70% of the group's 100,000 Boy Scout units are chartered by faith-based organizations, and they were worried. And yesterday in the news, it was saying that some were going to pull out. Well, what ended up helping it is that the Mormon Church, which is the largest sponsor of the Scouting troops nationwide, earlier this year said that they would support ending the ban. So the Mormon Church charters nearly 38,000 scout troops, which represents nearly 250,000 scouts. Then the next largest faith-based sponsor, the United Methodist Church, which charters about 11,000 troops, representing 360,000 scouts, they too issued a statement supporting an end to the ban. So you have number one and number two of the largest of the faith-based, which is measuring close to 1 million scouts, troops were 250,000, maybe 250,000. And then, interestingly enough, the Catholic Church, which is the third largest sponsors, 8,400 troops, they didn't take any official position on the controversy, which I am really proud of the Catholic Church in that regard. I've mentioned that I'm a cradle Catholic and I'm an observant Catholic, and so much has gone, you know, bad news with the priest pedophilia and all that stuff, which is horrific and has, you know, was handled improperly and incorrectly and illegally and everything else, so that they're finally kind of like loosening up and not making this black and white stance, because officially they don't sanction homosexual behavior. And that's why my sons especially, they say to me, Mom, you say you're Catholic, but you're not. And I was like, no, I'm Catholic. I'm Roman Catholic. And they're like, you think that priests should be married? Yep. You think that women should be priests? Yep. You think that homosexuals should be accepted? Yep. You believe in a woman's right to choose? Yep. Then how can you say you're Catholic? And I say, because I am. So, because I don't have the hard line that down there, they claim that I'm not. So I've mentioned this to some of my Catholic friends, and they're like, tell them to take a break, to have a chill pill. So gay rights advocates gathered more than 1.8 million signatures in support of ending the ban. Opponents collected 250,000 signatures. And Intel, which is one of the largest corporate sponsors of the Boy Scouts, said last fall it would stop supporting the Boy Scouts if they continued the ban on gay scouts. So Intel donated about $700,000 in 2009, and that's according to the American Independent magazine. So their announcement, following more pressure from gay groups, which did the nationwide campaign on change.org, that's where they gathered a lot of the 1.8 million signatures, urging Intel to withdraw its support. Then United Parcel Service, which is another major sponsor, followed suit in November, as did Merck and Company, and that's according to GLAAD. So there was this sea of change, and in my estimation, a sea of making it right. I've never understood people being biased or prejudiced against gay people. It's like, I don't understand. Your orientation is who you are. It's how you were born. It's just is if you're heterosexual and someone says, well, you know, why don't you be homosexual? And you're like, no, that I can't do that. That's not who I am. So I've had gay friends probably my whole life in college. And in fact, I actually had I went to college in Northern California at UC Davis. And one of my dearest like BFFs was this gay guy. And he had a boyfriend in San Francisco. And this was in the height, because I was in college in the late 70s. So this was in the height of the bad behavior, pre-HIV. And he would take me with him, and his boyfriend slash lover had a two-bedroom apartment, so I had a room to stay in. And then they would take me out into the gay leather bar scenes, and the things that I've seen, and I would be the token girl in the room, and because I was with them, it was cool. But if I hadn't been with them, obviously you don't have any place to go. So that it was no big deal to me. It was like, so, you know, whatever, that you like oranges and I like apples. I mean, so I don't get the problem. So it's, and then as you know, the Supreme Court has in front of it the Prop 8 that we here in California, and they're going to be deciding that. And it's interesting how they're going to weigh in on it, because the state of California is the first one that allowed interracial marriages 50 years ago. That went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the adage is what goes and it starts in the West blows East. So now that we mentioned there's about 12 states that already legalized marriage, but this would be, I guess, on a federal level to mandate it. So it's going to have some kind of implications depending on how they weigh in on it. It might not be that they don't want, it might be that to allow gay marriages to occur in California might step on federal toes, so that's why it'll be interesting to see how they rule. And it's supposed to be before the end of next month, so we should have news at any time. Speaking of legal, we have the Jodi Arias murder trial back in the news, because after about 13 hours of deliberations over 3 days this week, the jury gave up. So the judge announced a mistrial in the penalty phase of the case yesterday. A conference with her, Sherry Stevens, and the attorneys has been set for June 20th to determine how both sides want to proceed. In the meantime, she also set a July 18th retrial date, and so they have to decide. It's claimed that there was an 8-4 split in favor of sentencing Jody Arias to death. It has to be unanimous. So to get 12 people to agree on anything is probably pretty tough in general, but they sure did agree on finding her guilty. They said they pronounced her guilty of first-degree murder after 15 hours of deliberations. Then after less than 2 hours, they decided that it was exceptionally cruel. And then now this time they couldn't decide unanimously on whether to give her life in prison or the death penalty. So in many states, the death penalty would be off the table if the jury couldn't agree. But that isn't the case in Arizona. So now they have to decide, the prosecution has to decide if they want to insist on the death penalty, and they say that that's going to involve speaking with Travis Alexander's family, because these folks have been in limbo for 5 years since their brother was killed, son, cousin, whatever have you, and then they've been in court every day since January, so I think they were in Arizona since December. And do they have it in them to pursue that? If they choose not to, then that's when the plea deal might come into play. And if whether it's going to be life in prison without parole or life in prison with the possibility of parole within 25 years. So all of that have to, if they take the death penalty off the table, then a new trial isn't necessary, and then the judge can determine whether she's going to spend her entire life behind bars or could be released after 25 years. The judge cannot put her to death. So the state has to decide if it's going to seek the death penalty again. Then jury selection would have to begin, and on it goes. So the guilty verdict of first-degree murder still stands. So all the new jury would have to do is their sentencing decision. And I've served on a jury once, and it was slip and fall case in a hospital, and it lasted almost 2 weeks, and you have to be in court, I think we had to be there by 8:30, and it went till basically 5, and there were 12 of us and then two, I think, alternates, and it takes a lot of time, and I took copious amounts of notes because I wanted to make sure that when we deliberated that I didn't have to just rely on my memory, and I was serving with attorneys and a doctor and a contractor and fairly white-collar folks. And when we got into the jury room, they're like, let's get out of here, okay? This has taken up enough of our time. We need to go. And I was like, well, wait a second. You guys, we got to do the right thing. And they're like, yeah, we got lives to live. We got businesses to run. We got to get going. So it was 11 to 1, me being the one. But it didn't have to be unanimous. It just had to be the majority. Found for the hospital. I found for the woman that slipped and fell down the stairs, which destroyed her career, her health, her life. I don't think that she could fake that or make that up. And the poor thing, she had been offered a deal by the hospital, and when she didn't take it, now that meant that she was going to have to pay not only for her legal, but for their legal. So she just got screwed all the way around. But I can't imagine sitting around for 5 months with this, and then all that grueling testimony and everything else. It must have just been horrific. So that's, I'm glad that they did their civic duty, and now they need to get on with their lives. So the other story in the news, of course, this week, all week, has been the IRS scandal. And Lois Lerner, the woman in the middle of all of this, has been placed on administrative leave after she refused to resign. So there's also people saying that because she made the statement and then she invoked the Fifth, she might have waived her right to the Fifth because she made the statement. So that's up to people who have legal backgrounds to make that decision. But she refused to answer the questions on May 22nd of this week. She's the third person at the IRS to step aside or be pushed into leaving. Ken Corbin, who is a deputy director in another division of the IRS, is going to be taking her place. He's going to be the acting director of exempt organizations. He's been with the IRS since 1986. Now, he was put in that position by the acting IRS commissioner, Danny Werfel, who was put into that position on May 22nd, and he was assigned by President Obama and Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew. So it's getting more dubious with what's going on, and I've got a story to share with you about an example of what happened. But it's a federal crime to make false statements to Congress, and as a federal civil servant, Lois Lerner cannot be summarily fired. So the IRS is closed today, which is the first of 5 days which employees have unpaid furloughs, and it's going to be opening on May 28th after the Memorial Day holiday. So here's a case of a story, a real person, about what they went through with their application for tax-exempt status. It involves a woman in Texas, Catherine Engelbright. She lives with her husband in Richmond, Texas. They have a small manufacturing business. She has become interested in public policy in the past couple of years, so she founded two groups, King Street Patriots and True the Vote. So listen to this series of atrocities that she and her husband have had to endure. In July 2010, she sent the applications to the IRS for tax-exempt status. In December of that year, the FBI came to ask about a person who had attended a King Street Patriots function. The next month, January 2011, the FBI had more questions. That same month, the IRS audited her business tax returns. In May 2011, the FBI called again for an inquiry about the King Street Patriots, generally wanting some information. In June, the next month of 2011, her personal tax returns were audited, and the FBI called again. The next month, more questions. From True the Vote, on True the Vote. In November of 2011, another call from the FBI. The next month, more questions from the FBI. February 2012, a third round of IRS questions on True the Vote. And February 2012, another round of questions on King Street Patriots. The same month, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms did an unscheduled audit of her business. The business has a license to make firearms, but doesn't. In July 2012, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration did an unscheduled audit. In November 2012, more IRS questions on True the Vote. In March 2013, more questions. In April 2013, a second audit by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. All this because she requested a tax-exempt status for a local conservative group and for one that registers voters and tries to get dead people off the rolls. That's the True the Vote one. So her attorney says these people, they are just regular Americans. They try to get dead people off the voter rolls. You would think that they are serial killers. This week that we're in, she has still not received her exemptions, so she's suing the IRS. So that's what one person's story is, and it all was leading up to the elections. And I actually am partisan, but I really endeavor to be objective. And my personal politics are mine, and I'm very active in my party of choice, and I register, get out the vote, and I do precinct walking, and I call, and I belong to organizations and all that stuff, but I don't use the radio program as a format for that. In fact, when people say, what is your program like? I say, I call it personality radio. It's about current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, things to do, hardly any politics. There's a lot of angry white men out there that do it really well. I don't have any interest in getting into that arena. I know what I feel. But when doing this research about this IRS, it just is screaming that it's political. Because if it wasn't, then the left-leaning liberal groups would also have gone through the scrutiny, and they haven't. And, of course, all leading up to the election. So she's suing the IRS to get her tax-exempt status. And I have friends who are business owners, and they were saying that they're thinking about changing their registration, their political registration, because they don't want to have to go through that. And it's like, no, that shouldn't be. So hopefully we're going to get to the bottom of this. Hopefully we're going to find out who at the IRS did what, who ordered the targeting, why, and the full scope and the extent of it. So we need like an independent investigation. We can't have it happening internally because they've already proven themselves to not be trustworthy. And we can't have it happening from the administration because regardless of the results, people are not going to trust it because it's who's watching the hen house, the fox watching the hen house. Okay, so on some fun, more lighter notes. Charles Ramsey, who's the man who helped rescue the three Cleveland women that were held captive by Ariel Castro, is in the news again. And if you haven't seen or heard the sound bites from his interviews, he is absolutely precious, delightful, entertaining. It's well worth listening to. But in it, in interview after interview, he kept mentioning that he rushed to their aid carrying a half-eaten Big Mac. Well, he is going to get free McDonald's from his fast food restaurant for an entire year. And apparently, thousands of people took to Twitter in the days after the rescue, urging McDonald's to respond to Ramsey's Big Mac close-up. Free burgers for life, one man tweeted. It was the best advert you could get. Heroes eat Big Macs, another wrote. So others called for him to star in a commercial and become the next Ronald McDonald. So they were so inundated with suggestions that the company said they felt compelled to respond, but they wanted to wait so that there was some distance between the arrests and all of that that's going on, which I think was smart of them. So they are giving him McDonald's free for a year. They also donated $10,000 to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in the names of the three women held captive, Amanda Berry, Gina De Jesus, and Michelle Knight. So I mean that I love it when corporations do good things. Sorry, my throat. So in addition to that, 14 local Ohio restaurants announced that they're going to give him, Charles Ramsey, free burgers for life. All he has to do is flash his Chuck card, which is a lifetime pass printed just for him at the participating restaurants, and he's guaranteed the free burgers. So Hodges, which is a restaurant in downtown Cleveland, which is where Charles Ramsey happens to work as a dishwasher, is going even further. The restaurant is now offering a Ramsey burger, modeled after the Big Mac. And the manager of that restaurant said they sold 50 Ramsey burgers the first day they were offered, which was 2 weeks ago. And the restaurant normally sells 20 burgers a day. So it's been popular. So I love good stories. So also this week in the news, Tumblr, that was the story that Yahoo bought for $1.1 billion buyout, and we'll go into a little more details on that. But there was something this week called the Webby Awards, and they were held on Tuesday. And Steve Wilhite was given an Lifetime Achievement Award. And who gave it to him but David Karp, the founder of Tumblr and the one who the buyout was offered to for $1.1 billion. Now, why is this in the news other than that was nice? Because Steve Wilhite created the Graphics Interchange Format, or GIF, while working for CompuServe in 1987. So GIF is what it's shortened to, and it did big when the Internet was first around, and now it's come back in full force, not come back, but it's become more popular, more prominent because of Tumblr, to name a few, because people are posting little things on it. So GIF, people have been saying, is GIF, right? GIF. Steve Wilhite, who created the Graphics Interchange Format, delivered his five-word acceptance speech Tuesday night when he got the honor, because that's all the Webbies allow, by flashing a GIF on the big screens at the Cipriani Wall Street in New York. And here's his five words. It's pronounce GIF, not GIF. I blew that, sorry. And I'm spelling it out so you get it. It's pronounce JIF, not GIF. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So there apparently has been a debate that it's GIF is GIF, not JIF. So apparently on Twitter, everyone went, right, yeah, no, people were raging in. But who's getting lots of free publicity along the way? The peanut butter manufacturer. So on Wednesday afternoon, which is less than 24 hours after this all broke, the company took to Twitter with a post reading, "It's pronounced GIF," and put their logo and registered trademark. So the tweet linked to what else? A multicolored GIF flashing the same phrase. So it's pronounced GIF, even though it's spelled GIF. This from the creator of the GIF. And when we have our Word of the Month correspondent on, he, Peter Sokolowski, is the editor at Merriam-Webster.com. And he visits with us every month to talk about the most searched words for the month prior. And they get like 1.5 billion hits a year. So it's a lot of people looking. And he goes into why that word got searched so much and the definition of the word and the origins of the word. So I'm going to ask him about the spelling, because the Oxford English Dictionary says both pronunciations are acceptable. No less than the White House posted an image on its Tumblr feed advocating for the hard G pronunciation instead of the J that the creator did it. So I would say the last word goes to the dude who made it part of our lexicon. So Tumblr, which was bought out by Yahoo, which has like an 18 to 24-year-old demographic in it, and was founded in 2007, like my sons were saying, no one wants to know about Yahoo who's on Tumblr. Well, they're going to have to infiltrate it somehow. But one of the reasons is because of the young demographics that they have and some of the numbers. Number of Tumblr blogs, 105 million. Now, they don't have the numbers of Facebook, say, but they have hundreds of millions. Monthly visitors, 300 million. Posts per second, 900 posts per second. New signups every day, 120,000 signups every day. So Tumblr is visually friendly, publishing platform, perfect for GIFs. And because we're becoming so mobile, our phones and tablets are the preferred portals for people with access to the web. More people now access Facebook via mobile than on the traditional web, and more than half of Tumblr's 300 million users access it with their mobile app, and they do so on an average of 7 times a day. That's how much they're dipping into it. So I learned something that you may know or may not know, but NSFW is something that you're supposed to put, not safe for work. That means don't open it, don't click on it, don't download it, because you could get in trouble. In just a little bit, by the way, we're going to be speaking with our newest correspondent who's joining our program. She's our Match.com correspondent. Since it's Friday, people might be wanting to make plans. She is on Match.com. Again, no relationship with me or our program. It could have been Plenty of Fish or OK Cupid or all those that are out there. She just so happens to be on Match. She's going to talk with us, but you get to meet her. Hear about her, and then we're going to go into some of her stories on Match. Because like this, the couple that I went to their wedding, Bob and Patty, last Saturday, they met on Match. My hairdresser and her husband met on Match. My sister and her husband met on Match. I mean, there's plenty of people that meet and marry on Match, just not this person. So here's another great fun story that happened this week. A home remodeler is 34 years old. The Minneapolis Star-Tribune reports that a bunch of old newspapers were used to insulate a wall in a home that he was renovating. And it was a 1938 comic book, the Action Comics number one issue, which featured a new character on the cover, Superman. So he's putting it up for auction. The auction ends June 11, if you're interested. There are 31 bids as of now, including one for $107,000. So he's the father of four. He said, "I knew it was worth money, but I had no idea how much." Here's the sad part. The comic would have been even more money if he hadn't gotten in an argument with one of the relatives. He grabbed it back and ripped its back cover. So the experts later downgraded the comic's condition to 1.5 on a 10-point scale. So a 9-point grade Action One recently got more than $2 million, just to give you an idea of what that scale means to those out there who have that money to buy those kinds of things. So the co-owner of Comic Connect, a New York City online auction house, said that was a $75,000 tear. It would have been graded a 3.0 without the rip. So don't throw things away. Look and see. Somebody's trash is another person's, you know, treasure. So that's a perfect example of that. So now you're going to meet Lynn, who is our Match.com correspondent. It's Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you so much for joining us. It's Friday morning. I think I said that.
Hello.
Lynn, good morning. You're on live on the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you for taking the time to visit with us and for allowing us to introduce you to the listeners.
Good morning.
Good morning. So give us a little background about who you are, your life, where you're at in your life in terms of your career and your family.
Well, I am well established in my career, 18 years into my career. I'm a single mom of a daughter who's graduated college and a son who's just starting high school. So I'm kind of in that, you know, been married, have life experience, just looking forward to enjoying my life right now.
And what are you looking for socially in terms of your dating? Are you looking for a long-term committed monogamous relationship? Are you looking for a travel partner? Are you looking for a companion? Are you looking for just something casual?
I'm not really sure. I'm not really into the real casual thing, but I'm definitely thinking ahead that, you know, we're getting into that next stage of my life where those rocking chairs years are going to come in and you're going to want someone to sit next to you, you know, so that's always in the back of my mind. But right now I'm just kind of enjoying life and seeing what's out there, and traveling sounds wonderful, and I'm starting to get to that age where, you know, the kids are getting old enough where I can start doing things and having a little bit more fun, which is nice. But I have to keep in the back of my mind that they're still there and they still need their mama around. So I'm just open to meeting new people and making some friends and, you know, having the possibility that something could happen long term.
And how did you choose Match out of all the choices that are out there now?
It's so funny because I actually did the eHarmony thing quite a while ago. But because I'm not so much into the serious, you know, I don't need to get married again, and just looking more for friendship. I feel like my girlfriend said it so well. Match is kind of like the Carnival cruise line of dating, whereas eHarmony is more of the serious cruise line. So, you know, it's more of a just meet people, enjoy, have fun, which is where I'm really at right now. So I did choose Match for that reason.
Now, I thought the same, because when I started doing my internet dating, which has been like, I think it was 7 years ago, I thought you got to go on, because I was looking for a monogamous, serious, committed, future-oriented relationship, but I was clear on that. So I met a man, I decided that Match was just about hookups and that the other ones were about relationship, but I met a man who met his wife on Match, and he was from Nevada, she was from California, he moved to California to get married to her, so like he did a lot. And I said, why did you go on Match? And he said, because I was looking to get married. And I said, wow, that's not what I had heard. And he said, if you in your profile make it clear that that's what you want, then that's what you're going to attract.
Yeah, and actually it's quite funny because the people I've met are you know, very serious and not the, you know, they're not looking for the, I think, the party type relationship. And I do think we get to a certain point in our life where, like, we're over that, you know, or we don't need to go out every night, and we want to find someone real, and that whole real thing is really big on Match, you know, in the people that I've met. So you're right. It is. I think it has both, which is you can decide what you want.
So what I did, and I got off Match, I think, after 3 months, because it was too much for me. It's almost a full-time job if you're going to stay on top of it.
It really is. It's a little overwhelming.
Yeah, because people are so instantaneous that if you don't respond or reply or give your number or whatever, then they just move on. You know, it's like they're not, no one's waiting around, really. So
yeah.
How do you manage it in your life since you have a career and you have a household and you have children? How, like, do you do X amount of time per day, or you designate just the weekends, or how are you working it?
Oh, my gosh. I haven't really quite figured it out yet. I didn't realize it was going to be so much. And you're right. It is like if you're not on it, they're like, all right, done, moving on. So I think what I do is I just do the mobile app, and I do a little bit during the day, like during my lunchtime. Or if I'm standing in line somewhere or I have a few minutes, I'll just take it out and go, okay, I can manage this. But in between there, you know, you're trying to schedule dates and take care of your kids. And it's a little crazy. and fun at the same time.
So how is it that you choose? Do you look for men, or do you wait for men to either wink at you or let you know they're interested?
I've done both. I'm just started, and at first it was kind of like, I think when a new profile shows up, you just kind of get inundated. So I haven't had to do a lot of looking. So far, everybody's kind of been approaching me, which is really nice, because I don't feel like I have to kind of put myself out there. I have done it a couple times, and the cool thing is when you do put yourself out there and they don't answer, you really don't care, because there's 10 other people in line.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
Like it doesn't become so personal, like a rejection. It's just like, oh, I wasn't for them.
Right.
You know, and I come with my own set of complications and, you know, with my career, so I'm not going to be for everybody. And that's okay. I really like that. And you can go out on a date and say, you know, I'm not really, you know, thanks, it was lovely meeting you, but I don't want to do this again.
Well, the thing that's the one of the things that I did, I also did the default, because I figured men like to pursue, and at least if they make the initial entree, if you will, then you can decide if their profile meets for yours or not. Otherwise, you can be surfing and fishing and looking. I mean, I think they're the largest site. I don't know how big their database is, but
yeah, and that was kind of another reason I chose Match, because in eHarmony they just send you specific people that are, you know, just you, and you don't get to peruse the whole site. I kind of like having that option that if what they're sending me isn't enough, I can go one step further and just kind of look. But you're right, it's, you know, in the meantime it's nice just having people who are interested in me, and you know, you can kind of decide from there if you're interested back.
And what about your profile in terms of, did you say the right, correct age, and what age range? You don't have to tell me, but did you do like 5 years younger and 5 years older, or how did you market yourself in that regard?
Oh, yeah. I did, and I don't mind. I mean, I'm 45. I went 40 to 55. I thought that was a good, but I still get people younger than 40 and people older than 40 or 55 that you know, express interest. So you can go from there. But I think, you know, in your life, you kind of know what age range is going to be the best for you.
Well, and then I used to respond, because I went, this year, I went on to Our Time for a month or 2 months. I think I did the automatic renewal and didn't realize it. And so I thought, well, what the heck, I've already paid for this month. But I used to reply back, no, sorry, you know, I want somebody that's within 50 miles. You know, it went and put that in my profile, or I, you know, no thank you, I'm not interested in a 35 year old or whatever. And then I just got to the point where it's like, you know what, you don't have to respond to everybody. It's, you know,
I learned that really quick. I was trying to be very nice in the beginning, and you just can't. It just
right.
has to be like delete. And you know, I'm honestly trying to figure out how someone from Illinois wants to meet me, and I'm kind of going, well, how's that gonna work?
But you know, really.
I
know a gal that lives in Simi Valley. Her husband was killed. She had 3 children that were young. She started this great bereavement nonprofit because of it. But she finally, when she got around emotionally to have her stability, she went on Match. She met a guy in Australia. The freaking guy moved here, and they got married.
Wow.
I know.
That's.
But
I need to meet you, though. I need to see you face to face. All my instincts, you know, it would be very difficult for me to trust. But, you know, if you're open to that, that's fantastic. And I think the more open you are, the better your experience is going to be.
Well, I guess people Skype, and so you get that feel, but you just don't have the chemistry. You can't tell necessarily. But still, then there's logistics involved. It can't just be, hey, I got a free afternoon, can you meet me for a cup of coffee? Or,
right.
You know, there's no spontaneity that can take place, which is why I decided to narrow it down. Because I want to be able to say, hey, there's, you know, a movie just broke, and can you sneak out and maybe we can go catch a matinee, or, you know, something like that that you can't do if there's got to be a plane involved or a car ride.
And I haven't quite figured out how far too far, you know, distance-wise goes. You know, I have one person from Santa Monica interested, but there's a lot of great halfway points, you know, the L.A. to Santa Barbara. I mean, you got Ventura, you got Westlake, you know, there's just all sorts of great, wonderful meeting places. It's just logistically, how does that work in the long run? But for now, I'm not worried. I'm just like, just enjoy the time and go with it.
Now, do you plan on X amount of nights that you're going to be dating, or are you just waiting to see how it falls out, or are you earmarking certain nights and that's when you're going to go and meet?
I do mark certain nights. I usually, you know, I have 50% custody of my son, so I usually save the night that I don't have him, which is easier for me if I kind of keep... And I'm finding I do need to leave a little bit of time for myself in there, too. So, and I had to kind of slow down. At first, I was like, okay, every night. That didn't work out too well. So I'm like, okay, wait, let's be realistic here.
No.
Let's find a balance of how many nights you can go out.
My last Match.com correspondent ended up marrying somebody that she met on the site. And she had these hard and fast rules that I'm going to run by you to see what your thoughts are and if maybe you might want to think about adopting them. One was only a few emails exchanged, and then it's got to be a phone call. Like,
yep.
You know, not interested in these wonderfully poetic, long, like, no, I want to hear how you sound. Then, after the phone call, got to have a date. It's, you know, it can't just be then a phone friend. Got to, you know, like somebody's going to have to ask you out. Then the date was never a coffee. It was always a glass of wine at the end of the day. And her thinking on that was, I want to unwind and relax. I don't want to have to rush from work to coffee and back kind of thing. And if I like them, it might go into a second glass of wine or a dinner. And if I don't, I haven't blown my entire evening. So she was hard and fast on that. And I learned that my first date that I got off of our time, we did not have a phone conversation. We only emailed. And when I met him and I found out that he was living with his mother, that he didn't have a car, that he was driving hers, and that he was unemployed, I thought that's why you need a phone conversation. Because I would have found that all out. So I quick went to the bathroom, called our mutual friend, and said, oh, my goodness. And she was like,
get me out of here.
So I just came back to the table, and I said, this is not going to work. And he was like, what, no dinner? And I was like, no, no dinner. We're just in two different places. So I, you know, was able to bail, but that was a Saturday night at 6 o'clock. So I'm just sharing that with you because I don't know what, do you have a standard that you're doing with the emails?
Yeah,
and with the...
I'm doing the same thing. You know, at first I was kind of like no phone conversation because for me the phone conversation is weird because some guys just aren't good people to talk to and it's that awkward, we don't really know each other.
Right.
But now I'm learning quickly that from experience in talking to other people that I've gone out on dates with that absolutely do the phone conversation because you can pre-screen exactly the situation you just said. And so now I'm going, okay, regroup. I'm having to learn. I'm also learning, like, the cookie cutter responses you get, those emails that are very generic, I don't even respond to those now. It has to be personalized for me. That means you cared enough to actually read. You're not just sending out, you know, it's like phishing scam. You send out the same email for 100 people and you hope that someone bites.
Yes. Exactly.
And I am the same way. I need a glass of wine just because I'm so nervous anyway. You know, I mean, it's just nice. And I never plan for dinner, like you said, unless things are going well, you can add that on. But you need that out.
Yeah.
And I also encourage people, you know, I'm personally myself in a law enforcement field. And so the safety issue is always in the back of my mind. I'm going to a public place. I have a phone call check-in with one of my girlfriends. I'm keeping track of my drink at all times. I never leave it alone.
Oh, that's something I never would have thought of.
Yeah, people don't think about that. Leave your drink down and, you know, what could happen? Anything, they could put anything in it. So I take it with me if I go to the restroom or make sure it's, you know, empty and then get a fresh glass when I come back. All of those things are kind of in the back of my mind.
Well, and then this another thing that I've noticed that was odd was if you have the emails and then you have the phone conversation and then there's never the date. And I finally said to one guy, he was calling me like regularly, and I said, I'm not looking for a phone friend. You know, and he goes, well, I'm not either. And I said, well, we have yet to meet. And it's, you know, like we've had four conversations. Like, but I don't want to say, hey, by the way, are you going to ask me out? So it's kind of awkward in that regard. I guess, so I just stopped taking his call and I let it go to voicemail.
Oh, see, like, I'm the first to go, let's meet. When are we going to meet?
Okay.
Like, let's figure this out.
And then who pays if you say that?
Okay, so interesting enough, I didn't know how that works. So on all of my dates so far, the men have been very gentlemanly, which is very appreciative, to offer to pay the bills. But I always say, may I help out with that bill? And so far, everybody has said, no, thank you for offering, but I got this.
Nice.
So, but I bring cash just in case, you know, to cover my side of the bill. But I kind of, you know, you kind of have to look at, are they not touching the bill? Are they, you know, and if they're not touching the bill, being awkward about it, you can pick it up and say, hey, how about we split this or, you know, whatever. But far, everybody's been perfect gentlemen, so I really appreciate that.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I like the may I help with that, because that is nice, and it's respectful, too. Well, Lynn,
yes,
you're going to keep us posted then.
I will. I'm okay. Excited about all these new adventures.
Okay, and I look forward to hearing. So you'll check in with us next week, please?
I will, and have a great week.
Thank you, and have a good weekend, too, with all your dates. So we've got a Match.com correspondent. And again, it really could be called just a Internet dating correspondent. Maybe I'll do that, but she happens to be on Match. This is Maria Sanchez. The time is 9:50. We have to say goodbye. We will not be live on Monday. We will have a best of that will air, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Have a great Memorial Day holiday. Be safe.
Thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Live every weekday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, and on the net at LATalkRadio.com and MariaSanchezShow.com.